He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
That's the sound of over 2,000 people gathered in Auckland's Altea Square on June 14th this year. It's the second rally organised in Auckland under the Black Lives Matter banner, triggered by the death of George Floyd in the US. Behind this massive sea of people demanding an end to racism are the endless hours of work put in by a group of about 10 young Auckland-based activists. Welcome to Voices. I'm Kalumbri Gladding. Today I'm talking to some of the girls from this group about what it was like to pull off one of their first large rallies, luckily with the help of some very experienced mentors.
Kia ora, my name's Odez, I am 18. My mum is from Samoa and Rarotonga, and my dad is from Aitutaki and Ngāti Kahanungu ki Te Wairua on the east coast of the North Island.
My name is Feva Uka. I am a Congolese Nigerian. My mum is Congolese from the Muluba tribe. My dad is Nigerian from the Igbo tribe. And I am 21 years old.
Talofalava, I'm Nyele Kololo. I'm 19 years old today.
Happy birthday.
My birth mother is from Afanga and Puleia, and my birth father is from Safotu and Eva. My father, who raised me here in Aotearoa, is from Waimosoapia, and so I acknowledge all my islands. Yeah. And I was raised in Mangere, Southside, 275 Leshko.
Our group, this isn't everyone. This is only five of us, and there's about 10. We're called For the People, FTP for short.
Today the girls are talking to a class at the Auckland University of Technology, or the AUT. The course is in civic engagement, and they're talking to a pretty packed lecture room about their personal experiences with racism in New Zealand and their involvement with youth activism. One of the more common questions they've been dealing with, both before and after the rally, has been why police brutality and George Floyd's death in the States has any bearing on New Zealand society.
Why I thought it was really important for us to even discuss this is I think a lot of the time people have the privilege to assume that they're not associated with something that they were founded upon. So how America was founded is the same way that New Zealand was founded, the same way Australia was founded, is through colonization and the murder and the massacre of Indigenous people. That's just what it is. If it all has the same kind of soil, it's going to produce similar fruits, even though it might look different, but it might taste similar. So that's kind of how I see it. I think it's really interesting for us to, we always have these conversations, oh, we're the human race, but then when there's a problem happening overseas, we want to now say that it has nothing to do with us. So that's how I see it, is like it's actually not that different. So it's like, yeah, we have to talk about this.
And there's a lot of people who will question, well, the States, they didn't help us protest when we had our Ihu Mata problems, and we still do. So why are we protesting for their problems? I think one of our main goals, especially with the strike and why we had a lot of our academics speak, like Dr. Camille and Julia Faipulti and Kylie Quince was supporting, but she didn't speak, is so that we can localise these problems and shed light on the fact that Māori and Pacifica are really, really highly racially profiled, and the majority of people in our incarceration system.
So everyone here is talking and thinking about the murder of George Floyd in the US and the knee that was on his neck.
And that is Dr. Camille Nakid speaking to the crowd at the rally in June. Camille is an associate professor at AUT's School of Social Sciences, and it's her class that the girls have been invited to speak at today.
I want to talk about the knee on our necks. Racism is the knee on the necks of Māori, Pacific, ethnic communities of colour.
Camille is originally Caribbean, from Trinidad and Tobago. She's been living in Auckland for over two decades now. Camille was asked to be one of the mentors for the girls while they were trying to organise the rally.
You couldn't say no to them if you saw how they worked together and played to each other's strengths, how they put people forward. I think a lot of the time we ignore the input and the contribution of women. The media seems to be profiling young men, mainly, and young Muslim men since the Christchurch massacre, and, you know, rightly so. But there are many women that are there, and having them in that class, And if my class is predominantly women, and they need to see women reflected back at them.
And I think one thing for activism spaces is you have to be prepared for cognitive dissonance. There are going to be times where your values are just going to, like, they're going to conflict. Like, as a young brown girl, you know, in my traditional Pasifika family, girls don't really, like, talk about
this. They know the mahi. They are the ones doing the mahi. And the women in the classroom sitting as students are appreciative of that when they see that actually... No, there's female solidarity is strong. That sisterhood is strong.
When you're trying to get into activism, those like little like cultural kind of wired things in you kind of hold you back sometimes. Heavy mentors is understanding that people have paved the way for you to get into those spaces. Mm.
And you've had some really, really significant mentors like Dr. Camille, Ilolahia, all of these people that have really sort of informed your sort of thinking and narrative around this. What are some of the things that you've learned out of it?
Being able to have a woman, you know, a black woman in these kind of, like, in the spaces, and, like, I stand on her shoulders, like, all the hard work, all the late nights, all the arguments, all the emotions that she's had to go through, like, was for me to be able to have this privilege to be in these spaces. Yeah. And I think the best thing is just seeing how she doesn't talk to us as if, like, we're little kids who know nothing. Like, a lot of the time, as much as we're learning from her, it's like you feel like she's constantly, like, learning from us. She's constantly, like, asking, like, okay, what do you guys think? Like, what do you have to say? Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, tell me more. So you feel like, even though you're like, wait, you're Dr. Camille. Even giving us the opportunity to be able to come to her, one of the classes where she's lecturing and, like, speak, like, I think that helps motivate us as well.
Oh, man, like... When we had our first meeting, I think Nele had talked to Will for a little bit beforehand, but hearing a Polynesian panther sort of give you their blessing, it just sort of, like, these are my heroes growing up.
Yeah, because I remember I first got in contact with Will in when I was year 11 to do a history assignment, and then I kind of just kept this email from you. And I was like, I'm never losing this. I'm going to keep it. I just love the fact that for our mentors, like, one thing I've learned is that it's so easy just to reach out to people. Like, don't put people on this pedestal that you can't reach to. We didn't ask for half the things that they did for us. They just did it for us. And it shows how willing people are to mentor and to help you navigate spaces in activism.
What stood out for me was their wisdom. I just listened to them. I saw their interactions. I saw the diversity in terms of the equity, not just the tokenism, but the diversity of opinions and how they manage that diversity and how they embraced it.
As a group of young activists, I'm curious to know what some of the challenges were that you faced. Right. It's something that you haven't actually done on this scale before.
It's always something you are so personally invested in and emotionally invested in. Mm. Anything that goes wrong or anything that even your friends and family can say can be quite, like, it can be really, really heavy. The hardest thing for me was seeing my own friends, most of them who were Pākehā, who I tried to get to come on the day. They said, oh, I'm so sorry, I've got a shift, or I'm so sorry, I wish I could come, but I've got to study for this and this and this. And yes, I know that's important, and it's a massive privilege to be able to work and to be able to go to school. But people disassociate themselves so heavily from these sorts of movements because they are not people of colour, they're not black, they're not Indigenous. People don't see what's behind actually genuinely showing up for your friends and that it's not a POC colour, it's everyone's problem. And the hardest thing was watching my friends not engage in that conversation. I thought with all of this pressure and all of this social media attention on it that they might actually start, but there's still some hesitation.
I would say one of, like, the main problems that, like, I faced personally was just, like, for me, was the emotional side of it. So if I'm going to be honest, I was like, okay, cool, we're going to do this protest, and then what? Like, I still have to go outside and feel that pain. So sometimes you even feel like, why bother? But then you still have to do it because, you know, because I look at my younger sister, and I'm like, if I don't do it, then she's going to have to go through exactly the same things that I'm going through. And then having to deal with cloud chasers, you have people who would say, hey, I want to help out. We say, hey, would you like to help with being a warden? No, I think I'd rather, you know, say something, or can I be at the front, you know? And people just always want to be at the front, but nobody wants to help at the back. No one wants to pick up the rubbish after. Nobody wants to do the stuff. So that's how you know, like, well, are you for the cause? You just want to be in the front for the photos. But, like, do you know what? Actually, there's a bigger cause behind this, and it's bigger than me.
What do you think are going to be the challenges for people invested in that cause?
the challenge is to stay energized because it is very wearing. And I think those who want the status quo to continue are just going to wait for us to get tired because they know it is an exhausting, exhausting task. And all they have to do is sit comfortably where they are. And this is why changes need to happen during the momentum. We can't keep going from protest to protest to protest, allowing for Tereo Mari to those who want to learn it. That needs to happen. Dismantling the justice system and starting all over again needs to happen now. Addressing the failure of the education system with regard to Omari Pacific students need to happen now because they are failing our students. Our students aren't failing in the system. The system is failing our students. And they know this because it's been going on for a very long time. The physical deaths may not be occurring, but the deaths are still occurring. The deaths of our potential, of the potential of our Omari and Pacific and our students of color, that is occurring. The death of our spirit when you marginalize us and refuse to acknowledge that you've stolen lands from Māori, when you commodify us as migrants and say we can only come here if we can't contribute, that is a death of our spirit. That is a death of our humanity. So while the physical deaths aren't occurring, the deaths are taking place nevertheless.
When Māori, Pacific, our ethnic communities are put in the lower stream classes of your school, and those of you in schools and the teachers out here, you know that when you walk into a classroom, you know by just looking at the demographics of students in your class what stream those students are in. You know that. When that happens in our education system that is designed to fail us, that is the knee on our necks.
Getting up on that stage, the first thing that comes to your mind is, are you guys in here for the long haul? Because I know the people of color, these are their living experiences. And I looked out at all the people there and I thought, how long are you going to stand side by side? Will you go back to sleep when this is all over and press the snooze button? And it gives you hope that people came out a second time around, but then you don't see anything. You don't see any major movement politically. You don't see it in government. You don't see it in schools. Saying the wrong thing and not seeing anything can be just as bad because we know that silence is complicity in a lot of ways. The English Acts Act that they brought in 1854 to displace all Māori laws is a racist policy in itself. So everything stemming from European colonization of Aotearoa is what happens now. The thinking of all our major institutions, education, justice, health, housing, until we acknowledge that, nothing can change.
Are the voices of young people asking for equality being heard?
You know what struck me at that rally? The sheer number of young people that came up and said, we will stand with them. We need unconditional allies, people who will be there when the police get rough, when the racism starts hitting them, when they are being incarcerated, when they are being criticized, when they are being humiliated. And it is our Pākehā allies who have to be unconditional in their support, to speak up when they need to speak up. Watching that, I think young people, they have it if they can continue and if they're not disillusioned and if they're not co-opted into the capitalist system. You can't actually just sit back yet, but you know that our Aotearoa is in good hands if we hand it over to them.
Arupu, like, I feel like it's really connected our Black, Māori and Pasifika communities really well. I think we've done a good job in kind of bringing the conversation to New Zealand, and I think that's something we're going to continue to do, is bridging our communities together to fight racism here.
The power of the people, the power. Open. Ain't no power.
Thanks for listening. I'm Kadambri Gladding, and the audio engineer for this episode was Blair Stagpole. Don't forget to subscribe to Voices and other great RNZ podcasts on all your favorite podcast platforms.